We welcome back to Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Dr. Esther Sternberg, is the founding director of the University of Arizona Institute on Place and Well-Being, an expert on the science of the mind-body interaction and illness and healing, and particularly the way that place affects healing. We were speaking about sort of the architectural aspect of the way you look at things. Can you talk a little bit about the way that human beings' interaction with place influences healing?
There are many ways in which our interaction with place influences healing, and that's really the focus of the book, Healing Spaces. So the first thing is that place shapes behavior. You know, if you're in a place where you can exercise, where you can run, where you can walk, you're more likely to exercise. If you're confined to a chair, you're less likely to exercise. So that's a principle in the design field, place shapes behavior. But stepping back and asking how different elements of the physical environment could influence that mind-body interaction, it really is what you see and what you hear and what you smell and what you touch and even what you taste and then what you do in a place that can help you heal. And fundamentally, that's sensory neuroscience. It's how is it that what we see can help us heal? Well, there's a whole series of steps that have to happen between what you see, you know, looking out the window, and how that influences your immune system. And that's one aspect of science, figuring out how the different elements of space can affect your healing. The other is proving that, in fact, it does. So it's not a how question, it's a whether question, as in W-H-E-T-H-E-R.
Right.
So there are many studies, starting with Roger Ulrich's famous study published in Science Magazine, the top scientific journal, in 1984, where he showed that patients who were recovering from gallbladder surgery left hospital a day sooner, had needed less pain medication, had fewer negative nurses' notes, so they were in a better mood. Their bed was randomly set beside a window with a view of a grove of trees as opposed to a brick wall. And there are similar studies looking at people who were randomly assigned to apartments in the projects in Chicago with a view of a grove of trees versus a blacktop. And those were looking at psychological outcomes with less aggressive behavior, more interaction with their neighbors, and so on. So there's a wealth of studies showing that a view out a window of a view of nature is associated with improved health outcomes. And the question then becomes, how does that work? And you can take each of these elements, what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you touch, what you do, and break it down into its smallest controllable parts if you're doing a scientific study. So if we look at just what you see, it can be the view itself, so the view of greenery and nature versus a brick wall. It can be the light to which you're exposed to, and we know that full-spectrum sunlight helps improve moods, whether it's in seasonal affective disorder, a form of depression related to long exposure to low light, or in many forms of depression, or in people who don't have depression. So exposure to full-spectrum sunlight is good for your moods. You can do that with every single one of these elements of how you perceive and experience the environment. A lot of those aspects have to do with memory. So in terms of smell and taste, if you smell something that reminds you of childhood, for example, the happy place, the happy time, and this goes for looking at something as well, for hearing music, it reduces the stress response. It induces those anti-pain molecules in the brain, those feel-good molecules, the dopamine reward pathways. So there are positive molecules that are released, positive brain pathways that are activated, and negative ones like the hormonal stress response, the neuronal stress response that are dampened. And all of that is how what you experience around you can help you heal. It's not just looking at the view and some magic ether happens in the body. It's actually that there are changes in the body, in the stress response that is reduced, in the positive emotions that are enhanced, that then allow those molecules and nerve pathways to allow the immune system to do its job to heal.
it's very complicated, but not at all obvious that this isn't something that they've talked to you about when you check into a hospital. Would you like a room with a view of a tree?
Absolutely not, although there is a movement now amongst design professionals to do exactly that and go beyond healthcare design, but applying these principles to all aspects of design. So the president of the American Institute of Architects back in 2009, after hearing me speak about the subject, and I was doing a book signing, told me that I had inspired him to create a program at the American Institute of Architects to bring health into all aspects of design. And so there is a design and health research consortium at the American Institute of Architects. There is a design and health leadership group, of which I was one of the founding members. And certainly there is a tremendous movement to bring these principles into design of hospitals, but also offices, schools, your own home, and so on.
This has been an interesting subject for a long time. People have believed that places had healing qualities, and usually they associated with, I mentioned the water, you know, partly in fun, and I went into it, and it's really cold. But water seems to have some sort of intrinsically healing quality in people's minds. Why is that?
That's a really interesting question, and I'm not sure that I can answer it. It is true that it's universal across cultures, whether it's looking at water, whether it's being in water. You know, maybe in ancient times it was known that you need to wash to get rid of the bacteria. Well, they didn't know there was bacteria, but
no,
cleanliness
but
is important with, you know, for health.
When you think the Jewish, you know, mikveh is such a central feature of Jewish places all around the world.
That certainly may be part of it. I mean, a lot of these things, I think, were started for health reasons, that somebody must have noticed that there was an association. But again, beyond that, there is something about looking at water, hearing water, hearing running water, that is very calming. And that speaks to all aspects of nature. There's a whole field of design called biophilia, which means love of nature. And there's a lot of studies that show that the more varied plants, the more greenery there is, whether you're in it, in a forest, whether you're looking at it, it's associated with improved moods and less stress. So there are many, many elements of these kinds of places that contribute to healing. I think the history and the legend is very important. You know, in Tucson, we have our own mini version of Guadalupe, at Tumamoc Hill,
right.
At the base of Tumamoc Hill, there's a shrine to the Virgin Mary. And, you know, people go to that hill to reduce their stress. St. Mary's Carondelet Hospital is right across the way, so the staff use it. People in the neighborhood use it. People from all over Tucson walk that hill for many reasons, but including sort of spiritual experience of climbing to the top of that hill, and the stress reduction. And interestingly, it is and has been a sacred site for 3,500 years. So this is sort of typical of many of these places. Santiago de Compostela is the same. It was an ancient site of where there were prayers, belief that if a woman went to the end, it's called Finisterre, the end of the earth.
Right, the very end of we're on the coast, which it's sort of the farthest west you can get.
In Europe, right. Tip of Spain, the farthest west you can get in Europe, and women would go there to pray and to sunrise if they were infertile. And that was ancient. That was thousands of years ago. And then it became a sacred site for the Christians who believed that Santiago had reappeared there from the Holy Land.
St. James,
and,
right.
And so there are layers and layers. It's like an archaeological dig of belief that is often in these actual places. You have to wonder whether there's something about those places that really does resonate, and maybe the reason that people began to feel healed in those spots.
I have to tell you, there was an ancient pilgrimage route, we they think now, that ran not through Santiago de Compostela. They somehow sailed over to England, and it runs all the way to Stonehenge.
Yes, that is
phenomenal.
Correct. Yes, I've talked to archaeologist friends who've told me that
yeah,
Stonehenge
wild,
is another one of these.
Yeah, and it's along the sort of the same, and it ran through Canterbury too, which later, of course, became a pilgrimage site in the Middle Ages. But it was a pilgrimage site in Neolithic times.
Well, and Lourdes is on that
same
trail.
Right on the same path.
Right. So, you know, I experienced my own healing, which I didn't write about in the book, either books, directly, but we did address in a PBS television special that I did called The Science of Healing. And I had gone through a period of extreme stress when my mother was dying of cancer. My father had died of a long illness, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's-like illness. And I developed inflammatory arthritis, which was sort of ironic because I was a rheumatologist who discovered that the brain's stress response is important in susceptibility to inflammatory arthritis. And then 10 years later, I get stress and then I get arthritis. And I had moved into a new house in Washington, D.C. shortly after my mother died. And my neighbors were Greek, and they came to the door bringing moussaka and tzatziki and dolmades, and they saw me writing what was to become my first book, and they asked me if I'm a writer, and I said, oh, I don't know, why do you ask? And they said, because we've always wanted a writer to stay at our cottage in Crete. And I said, I'm a writer. And I went with them to Crete, to Lentas, which is a tiny village on the south coast of Crete, which has this history of healing. I did not know that when I went there. It particularly has a history of healing related to water, because there was a fresh water source in the time of Hippocrates. It was that's 500 BC. It was a thriving seaport, which was the first stopping point for coming from Egypt. And what I discovered, first of all, I got better while I was there. It was only about 10 days, and I began to really feel better day by day very quickly. And I discovered above the town that there was a temple to the Greek god of healing, Asclepius. There were these ruins, which the villagers, it's a tiny village, and the villagers just took for granted. They said, oh yeah, there's some, you know, ruins up there. And it was this amazing temple to the Greek god of healing. And so even way back then, the ancients felt something about that place that helped them heal. And part of it was a fresh water source. But part of it, I think, was the calm, the beauty of the Mediterranean, sitting on that slope, looking out. And, you know, I would spend hours up there just, I called it contemplating, because at the time I didn't realize I was meditating. I was in the moment. I was listening to the birds. I was listening to the scratch of the gardener over on the slope, the sheep and the goats and the wind, and it put me in this state of calm.
And it healed you, or helped heal you anyway.
Yes.
I want to thank Dr. Esther Sternberg for a fantastic visit here on Two Jewish. I feel like we just scratched the surface of how this affects everything. We'll have to have you back. If people want to find out more, the best place to go online, esthersternberg.com, ESTHERSTERNBERG.